We'll call the August 7th meeting of the Board of Directors of SLOCOG together and rise for a flag salute read by Member Bruce Gibson.
If you join me, please.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Can we call the roll, please?
Board Member Arnold.
I'm here.
Board Member Compton.
Here.
Board Member Davis.
Here.
Board Member Gibson.
Here.
Good Board Member Hill.
Here.
Board Member Lee. Board Member Moreno.
Here.
Board Member Peace.
Here.
Board Member Paulding.
Here.
Board Member Waggy.
Here.
Vice President Pichon.
Here.
President Strong.
Here.
Board Member Gubbins.
Here.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you. We have a quorum. And we will open the floor for public comment. I have only one request slip, and that is from Eric Greening.
Good morning, I'm Eric Greening, and first, just to make sure, there will be a very brief consent item only, as I understand it, regional transit meeting following SLOCOG. Will there be a period for non-agenda public comments at that meeting? Will you open the floor for RTA comments at that time? Okay, I will hold those, and the one issue I'll raise relative to SLOCOG public comments is I was very glad to see that a meeting took place between SLOCOG people and RIDON people on July 22nd, and that indeed these meetings are going to recur, I understand, aiming for monthly meetings. Obviously, my preference with anyone receiving LTF funding is that they have a board that meets in public, but we're making a big step in the direction of transparency simply by having this more accountable process with meetings with SLOCOG. And it sounds as if we may be moving with the senior shuttle toward what was spoken of originally as the brokerage model, where instead of feeling that VTS and RIDON are in competition for rides, they will find ways to cooperate and each be able to step up and offer the best, you know, what they are best at. Assuming this develops, it might be appropriate for RIDON to get more of the LTF money than had been previously assigned in this budget. And at SysTAC, I raised my one concern with this, which was that if their percentage goes up, the other jurisdictions have already budgeted what they thought they were getting, and no other jurisdiction or RTA should receive a cutback. I was assured, and perhaps Pete can reassure us that if indeed there was more deserved funding for RIDON, it would come out of contingencies and not out of the jurisdictions, that there wouldn't be any cutbacks or editing of those budgets. But if that is indeed the case, then again, I hope that we are successful, that both VTS and RIDON are able to play to their strengths. The seniors will have all the possible options before them, and that we can actually create the genuine brokerage model that was discussed maybe a year or so ago when this new idea was tried. So I wish all the providers their best in meeting the needs. Thank you.
Thank you. I have no other requests for public comment. Oh, I have one at the back.
Sorry.
Got in a little bit late.
Sorry.
So we will wait for him to arrive.
You know what my favorite prayer is?
What's that?
Lord, give me patience. Give it to me now.
Thank you.
Well, thank you. Welcome.
Thank you.
Move the mic around for us.
Oh, sure. Thank you. The last time I spoke here,
I was talking about the fact that the state of California, the legislature, has passed laws requiring city councils in the SLOCOG and to do things. I think it had to do with housing. And my position was if the state passes a law that is wrong, in my opinion, and your job is to represent your constituents, and you are to stand up to the state legislature. And one of the members of your group got upset because I mentioned the Nuremberg trials. So today I thought I'd bring up some other people who've had the courage to stand up against unfair laws passed by Democratic legislatures. The first person I want to mention is Henry David Thoreau. He started what's called civil disobedience, although I don't know that he started. I think Jesus was the first person to civil disobedience, but he wasn't under a Democratic legislature. Henry David Thoreau was, and he was opposed to the Mexican-U.S. war, and he refused to pay his taxes because of his opposition to that war. Well, that was against the law, and he ended up spending a night in jail, and you're welcome to read his tale about spending a night in jail, standing up for his conscience and standing up to be courageous to break the law, even though he suffered the consequences. The next person I want to bring up is Mahatma Gandhi. Mahatma Gandhi was striving for the independence of India from the British Empire. There was a democratic elected government in India, and he was opposed to it, and he broke the law. One of the laws he broke were the salt laws. There was a monopoly on the production of salt by certain companies, and he broke the law, and he went to jail, went to prison for his beliefs, and he ended up getting Indian independence. The next person on the list that I have was Rosa Parks. And I'm sure some of you might even support what Rosa Parks did, even though she was breaking the law. She refused to obey the Jim Crow laws that said that she had to sit in the back of the bus. And for her results, she got arrested for breaking that law and started the civil rights movement. The next person in this list was Martin Luther King Jr., which some of you may have even supported or agree with, even though he broke the law. He went to prison also to approve the civil rights laws and get civil rights acts passed. The next person on this list was Nelson Mandela in South Africa. He was opposing the apartheid laws in South Africa. And he broke the law and spent 20 years in prison because he didn't agree with the law. Even though the state legislature there had passed the law, he had the courage of his conscience to stand up. I hope you do too and will stand up to this corrupt state legislature. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Kirkland. And do I have any other people who want to make a public comment? Okay, public comment is not on the agenda as an agendized item, so we don't discuss or take any action on it. And that is a normal procedure. Although many of us, I think, on this board have stood up for laws we didn't agree with and did it by advocating with the appropriate legislative body for changes to that law rather than going to prison. But that is personal choice. We'll move on to our director reports.
And, good morning, President Strong and board members. Before I start the executive director's report, I'll just respond to Mr. Greening's request for an update on the ride-on meetings. We have had two meetings. As you may recall, at our meeting at Atascadero, we identified Delegate Arnold and Paulding to work with ride-on. In those two meetings, we've been trying to come to some agreement on how to work better together. And I wanted to clarify that if we do decide there are some additional funding opportunities within the ride-on budget, it would not come at the result of cuts to TDA to any member jurisdictions. We have purposely left a fairly large contingency in the LTF fund and our TDA funds, and we would be using those resources, and it wouldn't result in any cuts. Mr. Greening also asked for a brokerage model to be created for senior go type services. We already have a brokerage model, and we've chosen VTS as that provider to be the broker. So that's the brief update there. Moving on to the, if there's any questions on that or any further information from the members, I'd be open to that. Okay.
Did you want those questions now, if there are any?
I'm willing to respond.
Anybody have a question in this matter? Anyone on my left? Please proceed then.
Okay, the executive director's report. I'm just going to touch on three items real quickly. We've had some movement on the federal reauthorization of the FAST Act. Of course, this act expires in September 2020, and this is pretty good news, really, that they've been able to move forward on it. The Senate Environment and Public Works Committee released some bill text. It includes a 17% increase in highway funding. We're not sure if this is going to move forward, but it is a good start. This is really just on the highway side, not on the transit side. There's good news on the infra grants with some increases of $5.5 billion a year and new bridge funding, a new bridge funding program, funds allocated for that. Some language on resiliency, climate resiliency, and some streamlining. And then I wanted to introduce some new people here in the room and also at the statewide level. Tim's got a new boss with Bob Franzoli, and he has some history working in the state capitol, and he is an interim appointment, and we expect him to be around another couple of months. I have not had the opportunity to meet him. I have had the opportunity to meet David Kim, the new CalSTA secretary. So CalSTA, as some of you may not know, is the cabinet-level position that has oversight over Caltrans, high-speed rail, CHP, DMV. You can count on me for acronyms, don't worry. Really nice guy. Look forward to working with him. And we've expressed to him the opportunities we have on the Central Coast for upgrading our core highway, critical Highway 101 projects and rail projects. Turning to our local new employees, we stole from the county, Sarah Sanders. Sarah, please stand up. So Sarah previously worked for SLOCOG, and she worked in the rideshare program with us, and she's been at the planning department. For 3 years, she's been at the planning department, and she secured a master's in transportation and environmental services.
Transportation engineering and city and regional planning.
And we're happy to have her. She's going to help. She's going to help fill the void of Jeffrey Chiappella, who left us to go work in Denver. And also I'd like to introduce Ritu. Ritu is going to also help with GIS. Ritu Murali, I knew I was going to mess this up. Murali Dharan. And she's a recent Cal Poly graduate, and her bachelor's degree was in city and regional planning with a focus on sustainable environments and transportation. She worked with the city of Dublin for an internship, and she'll be working with us on GIS and modeling and data services. And then finally, we have Catalina Hubbard, who comes to us from Santa Cruz, and her degree was in environmental studies. She worked on a pedestrian improvement plan and also did some event coordination for Save the Waves Coalition, and she'll be working on the rideshare program with Safe Routes to School and commuter and employer outreach. So welcome all three of you. And then finally, I wanted to turn to our strategic plan. I've sent you all an email to fill out. We only have about 25% response rate so far, and the survey's been out for, 2 weeks. And we're really trying to bridge the gap between our annual work plan, which you approve every year, and we have our 20-year RTP, Regional Transportation Plan. And so we really need your help refocus the agency. Of course, I've been in this chair only about 10 months, and we're slowly evolving to try and have shorter meetings, more productive meetings, shorter presentations, and we look for your input on how we can improve our process. And the deadline is Friday, so please chime in. And so with that, I'll open it up to any questions of the board.
Are there any questions on my right? On my left? Good job. All right. We'll turn to Caltrans then for a report.
Thank you, Chair. Tim Gubbins from Caltrans. I just wanted to update on a few projects and a few other things in the news. As Director Rogers said, the Director of Caltrans did retire at the end of the fiscal year, end of June, Lori Berman. So Bob Franzoia, who is an employee of agency, has stepped in to be our interim. As the new secretary, David Kim, just started in July. He's taking a little while to fill the spot, and so we're expecting in the next month or two we'll probably have an announcement as far as our director. For projects, the Highway 1 paving project in North Coast between Cayucas and Harmony will continue. We have ramp closures in effect this week. That will continue this week. And then next week, further north of that, north of San Cupofor Creek Bridge up to Ragged Point, or north of Ragged Point, we're going to be closing the road to construct an emergency project. There's been a road failure there, and we're putting in a viaduct. So we're going to be doing some overnight closures and some full closures there. I think we've gotten that word out. It could last up to 4 weeks, depending on how fast it takes us to build that. But we'll continue to put out news as we can, and we're trying to adjust those closure hours to adjust things. Hopefully we'll have that done well before the winter sets in. Another project to give you an update on that's not yet in construction, 101 Welsona. There's been a lot of discussion about that here at the board and at Caltrans. That project, we've actually been able to program a safety job to construct an undercrossing south of the Welsona so that Welsona can be closed but still allow east-west access. We have made great progress on that. The draft environmental document should be available for public review in another 1 to 2 months. And then we can look for appropriate, I've already talked to the supervisor of the area, look for appropriate community meetings so that everyone knows what's happening and all that type of stuff. And finally, on a lighter note, I'll go back to Highway 1. If you've been up north of the Piedras Blancas Lighthouse, you may have seen goats in the Caltrans right away. There's a 20-acre site up there that's had a lot of invasive non-native weeds, and we found a nice sustainable way to take care of those that actually seems fairly effective. There's a 300-goat herd up there being managed, and they're able to eradicate some of those very well. So with that, I would entertain any questions.
Very good. Any questions? Yes.
Tim, the 101 Welsona undercrossing, what's the timeline to finish something
it,
like that?
It is programmed out to start construction in about 3 years, but right now the environmental document we're about almost a year ahead of that. And so once we get that environmental document done, get that complete, we'll start. There's, I think, a little bit of right-of-way and design, and then there's design to do. So within 3 years, I would say. But we're going to go as fast as we can on that one. We realize the importance.
Related question, on and off on the highway?
I'm sorry.
How are you handling the on and off on the highway?
At Welsona?
Yeah.
The right-in, right-outs that exist will continue, and then there'll be a frontage road that goes down to the south for an undercrossing. Just no left turns and no across the median access will be allowed.
Okay, very good. Thank you. On my left, any questions? You're home free. Thank you very much. Okay, and we'll move on then to our public hearing items, and the first one is the 2019 Federal Transportation Improvement Program, Amendment Number 5. John DeNunzio.
Good morning, President Strong and Slocog Borg. I'm John DeNunzio, Slocog staff. I'm here to present the Amendment Number 5 to the Federal Transportation Improvement Program. The FTIP is federally funded, regionally significant projects go into this document. It's a four-year document. We update it every 2 years. It is consistent with the RTP, and the air quality conformity is financially constrained. Projects have to be in the FTIP in order to receive federal funds. Some of the features and highlights of our FTIP, again, it's federal fiscal years 18-19 through 21-22. There's 104 transportation projects or group lump sum programs in this document. They are federal, state, and local funds of approximately $609 million programmed in this 4 years. Amendment number 5 increases the programming capacity by $10.5 million, addressing four changes. The first change is a new project, a Caltrans project, and overlay maintenance resurfacing will occur on the 101 in front of Pismo. This will be from south of Price Canyon Road to just north of Avila Beach Drive. This will occur in fiscal year 20 and is $5.4 million and will be resurfacing both northbound and southbound. So during this time, people might think that we are fixing the Pismo congestion relief project when in fact it is just a surface overlay. Secondly, deserves a little bit of kudos for the city of SLO for securing a federal funding of $4 million in fiscal year 19 for a railroad safety crossing. So this is federal money that's coming to address the railroad crossing right at Foothill and California in front of Cal Poly. The third is we had some narrative and descriptive changes for our highway safety improvement program. And fourth change are funding for two new 35-foot buses for South County Transit in fiscal year 19, fiscal year 20, totaling approximately $1.1 million. So again, these are the changes for amendment number five. If you have any questions about those changes, I'm available to respond. There's also more information in the staff report and also on SLOCOG's website. So we're seeking that you adopt the resolution approving amendment number five for the 2019 FTIP.
Thank you. Are there any questions or comments on my right? On my left, any? Okay, we'll open it to the public, although I have no speaker requests. Anybody want to speak and fill out one? Seeing no one, we'll bring it back to the board for action. Yes.
So moved.
Okay, we have a motion by Member Hill and a second by Member Gibson. And roll call, please.
Board Member Hill?
Yes.
Board Member Gibson?
Yes.
Board Member Arnold?
Yes.
Board Member Compton?
Yes.
Board Member Davis?
Yes.
Board Member Lee?
Yes.
Board Member Moreno?
Yes.
Board Member Peace?
Yes.
Board Member Paulding?
Yes.
Board Member Waggy?
Yes.
Vice President Pichon?
Yes.
President Strong?
Yes.
Pass.
Thank you. All right. Next, we will move on to our regular items, and that's transportation and presentations. B1 is the 2020 fund cycle, regional programs on underfunded projects. Please.
Fantastic. Good morning, Mr. President, board members, Rich Murphy, SLOCOG staff, to go over our 2020 programming. This is our third presentation this calendar year on the 2020 funding cycle. We had a consent item back in June for information and some additional modifications to a policy back in June. So a lot of discussion on this topic, and today we want to give you an update on four issues as we proceed into some final action later this fall. The four items we want to talk about today is where the fund estimate is. We've provided you some information back in February and April, and today we want to update you as to where that stands. With respect to the update of projects at risk, we provided a status of our programmed projects back in April. We identified a number of projects, we call them the notables, that had some budget scope schedule issues, and we wanted to make certain that none of them would be slipping with respect to opportunity this funding cycle. And we want to talk thirdly about the local choice and or local choice portions and regional programs, which is a section here we'll get into more detail about. And then lastly, what is our intention moving forward? Short conversation about our expectations on this, what we're calling a study session, work session for September. So with those four items slated for discussion this morning, let's get right into the fund estimate. Right now we're talking about a $20 million funding program for the 2020 fund cycle. Typically we look out 5 years, and in this case we are still looking out 5 years. The $20 million that we have identified is primarily available in the early years, the year one, two, and three of those five. We don't necessarily have new resources in year four and five, but we have the flexibility to move to have that $20 million ebb and flow between the first these 5 years out to 2025. So depending on when projects are ready to list, we have that flexibility to not necessarily spend the money right away, but deliver the project in, say, year four if it should be the priority. And again, this is to implement what this board and the team here has produced as a long-range plan, and there's been a lot of discussion about the long-range plan and some of our short-term priorities. So $20 million is less than what we said. We said we had 28. We're down, and of the three funding programs that we're talking about for our surface transportation program, we're looking at about $11 million of congestion mitigation. Those are federal funds, CMAQ monies. We have $9 million in federal funds as well, known as the Surface Transportation Block Program. And then with respect to the state highway account, which are the monies programmed in the STIP, which is managed by the California Transportation Commission, we have currently $33 million currently committed from 2018, and those are those funds are identified in one of your tables in the staff report, table 3A, and there is no new capacity in the 2020 fund cycle, and we'll get into a discussion about that, because probably if you're like me, you've been scratching your head saying, wait, didn't we just have Prop 6, SB1, isn't the gas tax has been increased? Haven't we been paying more on our vehicle registration fees? And the answer is yes, we have been doing all of that. And exactly, no. But with respect to SB1 and some of the issues associated with the revenue assumptions, when in 2018 there was discussion about getting a sense of the program bringing in $5.4 billion annually, when they were looking at revenue assumptions to the 2020 fund cycle, they were assuming gasoline consumption at a different rate. So consumption of gasoline has gone down considerably throughout the state. So there's less revenues being being brought into the state coffers. Fuel consumption trending down. The Board of Equalization, State Board of Equalization, they did not adjust the fuel tax back in 2016 upward to make the necessary adjustment to capture what some of the revenue assumptions were. And this, I'll come back to what that represents. But then there was also a great deal of restoration of project funding for a number of capital investments that had to be deleted back in 2016 and or delayed or deferred due to no resources. So they needed to get money back infused into those projects. And there was some aggressive programming by the Transportation Commission in 2018, what we call advanced programming, to really get a lot of these projects out on the road. And that's what this chart represents. It comes from the California Transportation Commission's website. This is just a snapshot of all the funding from SB1 that's out on the road being either in construction or soon to be in construction. And those components added up equal an adjustment period for the 2020 STIP, and we just don't have revenue, new state highway account revenues for this state highway, for this particular funding cycle for the STIP. So those points being made, I just wanted to state that of the revenue that we have at our disposal, we're going to continue our investments of our regional programs and initiatives. We're going to still maintain investments in our priority corridors, and we're going to still focus on our short and midterm horizon projects. So to the second issue that we wanted to address today is the updates of the projects at risk from April that we called out. Table 4 in your agenda packet on page B17 has a discussion of those broken out by categories of major, from those that were at risk on the priority corridors, those that are regional access projects, those are multimodal projects, and some of our regional program issues like project initiation documents. So we identified three in that table that are extremely, well, we feel we can take action today or make a recommendation to take action today to keep these projects in stride. The Atascadero-Templin Connector has all the funding secured, construction, it's all lined up, and to maintain progress, there's been some adjustments in the alignment, so we're looking to have some design resources available in to address some UP and state highway constraints. So $250,000 is being recommended immediately for the county to continue their design work. The Bob Jones Trail Similarly, to keep it on track to be competitive on the construction side, we don't expect that there'll be SLOCOG resources for the construction side, but that this project is truly shovel-ready, and the County Public Works Department has indicated that where they stand with some of the constraints to get through the final design, $350,000 is required there, and then we wanted to make follow through on the RTA maintenance facility and make a it's a little sort of not left field, but it's a different funding source than what we've been talking about. But nonetheless, we see it as a major multimodal investment, comes from our Prop 1B program, and we want to make sure that our match monies are properly suited and shifted, and we felt today's action could do that, keeps RTA moving and keeping them in stride, getting the maintenance facility going. What isn't identified on here is obvious notable is the US 101 managed lane. The design is underfunded. We know that we have to address that with the $20 million at our disposal for this funding cycle, assuming that remains a priority. And so I just wanted to also note that in your agenda packet, attachment D gives you more detail about those three funding recommendations. Getting into the third issue, which is really table two, which is earlier in your staff report. So I'm kind of, my apologies if I'm jumping a bit, but hopefully this is keeping us somewhat in sync. Is table two really summarizes all the recommendations here today, funding recommendations, the third component being the local choice and regional programs, and the local choice simply being the apportionments that are made to each of the member agencies. Those are federal apportionments that we exchange for state highway account funds. It can be used for street and road maintenance, or it could be used for betterments, or it could be used to leverage and match some of our competitive programs, like the Safer House to School program, Transportation Safety Partnership program. These are all the regional programs. I've just listed a few, all identified in your attachment B, some discussions that discusses some of the successes and some of the accomplishments in each of these programs, and just want to make certain that you're in tune with what those programs are, and that you've had an opportunity to you had the opportunity to ask us some follow-up questions here today, of course. And then, so where does that leave us after you deal with the local choice programs, the local choice and the regional programs? We just went from 20 million. We started at 28 in April, went down to 20 before we went to table two. We're at 14.3. So $14.3 million is what we're going to be discussing in September about what to do. And not only is the 14.3 in a discussion as new capacity, we have some guiding policies from April, which we perhaps need to revisit, because at the time in April we had expected a higher capacity of new money. So I think we'll want to chat about some of the policies from April and how that may affect some of the decision making. But also to really bring into the discussion is these prior funding commitments of the state highway account. Table 3A, which I mentioned earlier, has $33.2 million worth of projects. Some of them are for design to keep moving into getting them ready for construction at some future date. Some of it is for capital. Some of it is for capital, and there's clearly a finance plan in place to demonstrate that the project is fully funded. And some we have some questions about. And we need to get to some solutions to see if there's additional capacity from this short list of projects, or if there should just be one or two priorities from this short list of projects and prior commitments be damned, so to speak, and we move in a different direction. I think all those opportunities to have that discussion will be there. But clearly those agencies where we've been working with, and City of Rio Grande, the City of San Luis Obispo at Prado and at Frisco, we have high confidence with respect to the financial plans that are coming together, that those two capital projects are going to move forward, and that we could support and defend the recommitment of those monies without any problem. But there's others here that we have some issue with. And we also want to discuss what those financial agreements look like, and so that we've shared a draft of what that entails in your agenda packet. And we'll also discuss what we have shared before, this needs assessment of where things are queuing up and where the ready-to-list dates are and the shovel-ready aspect of each of these projects, and zero in on how our resources are either going to just focus on a handful of projects, or is it intended to deliver one or two projects, but also leverage, hence what this table and chart is intending to represent, that there are a number of other grant programs, that the discretionary programs out there that the state has, that we've tried to compete in cycle one under SB1, and there will be more under cycle two, and there's clearly going to be, SB1 is in perpetuity, and so how we intend to try to leverage our funds towards these other programs is a discussion we need to be having. Once again, we had this discussion in 2018. We presented a concept, as you recall, that looked something like this under 227 and 101, where we had the priority corridor, we had the alt route, we had identified components, which all come from that list, and we identified some of our match monies, and we called out a capital ask under SB1, and we had an approach, and it didn't get awarded. So we've had some lessons learned. We've had the post-mortem with the CTC. We're having discussions with the district, and we need to know, part of the study session is what's real, what's not, and let's get to some final actions in October is what's preferred. Today, our draft actions in October and transmittal, final in December and transmittal to the CTC in December. So today, draft recommendations for the local choice and regional programs, Table 2, and also identified in Table 4. There's a lot of comments and notes in Table 4 we're happy to talk about, and direct us to come back and roll up our sleeves with all of you to come up with an approach on how to implement the short queue, the priority queue of projects with respect to the regional value of what we're wanting to accomplish. We've had support by our advisory committees. We did have a discussion with the city managers, and they didn't necessarily see the staff report, but we did discuss prior approaches, and we had a good dialogue. You may want to comment on that, Pete. But that's where we stand with this presentation this morning. Yeah.
Okay, thank you. Member Hill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Could you go back one, Rich, on to the corridor? Yeah, okay. So I just wanted to try to clarify something, if I could. I understand we discussed the sort of strategic approach that was made by the state on advanced programming, on SB1 and in light of the election and all that. So are we to understand that, because we have, particularly in South County, South San Luis Obispo County, some serious problems in both of our state highway systems, both 227 and the 101. So are we to understand that the reason why we're not moving forward on, or at least right now, on the, for instance, managed lane project in Pismo Beach 101 corridor, or more quickly on relief for 227, is because the advanced programming is already in our account and there's not more that we could qualify for it in this particular cycle?
So the pre-construction work is happening on both corridors. Mm-hmm. So the consultant of choice, the district, Caltrans District 5, is our environmental consultant team, and very likely will be our design consultant team. And the monies are all in place for the environmental documentation for the 101 managed lane. We expect a project report to be in Tim's at Tim's desk, on Tim's desk in the early part of 2020. And then that allows us to be, expecting that allows us to either fully fund the design and start looking at the construction cost of it, and the construction cost is $25 million. We thought there may be components of that project of independent utility. That may not be the case. That's a discussion for September, quite honestly, as we get more information with the district. But to answer your question, two fronts. We're trying to do our best working with our member agencies to bring them both to shovel-ready status. And 227 with focus at Los Ranchos and the County Public Works is, has their project management implementation strategy and outreach approach that they're taking on may be a little bit slower than we had wished, but with all due respect to what they're doing, it's still moving forward at a timeline. And you've seen us do these timelines. Transportation investments are frustrating, from getting something at the point in time of setting an expectation to actually getting a project constructed. But both, I think everyone is at work doing what they can. Nothing is being held up and on either one of those, aside from securing capital funding and just putting, and after secure of those capital funds, knowing the year in which they're coming. Los Ranchos is funded fully as a roundabout. Buckley is not. And Buckley will be in the conversation for
September.
For September.
Okay. Well, I know Mr. Gubbins is quite aware of this. 227's, you know, the impact on it right now and the impact that's coming is catastrophic to many people who certainly have to travel there every day. You've got an expanding airport. You have 700 plus new homes coming in the city of San Luis Obispo, which, and also it continues to be South San Luis Obispo, the really the center of jobs and employers out there. So, and a lot of people are, you know, traveling in and out on that way every day, and it I think it's pretty clear. And of course, I think you're also aware, because I've talked to your folks about it, there's no lack of opposition to beginning the turnabouts with Los Ranchos. So funding perhaps Buckley, which will be highly impacted by the coming development, you know, it's probably not a day that goes by that I don't hear people concerned about that corridor. So I just want to emphasize that as we look at capacity moving forward. And I am glad to see us moving forward on the Bob Jones, this element of it, with a lot more to go. So I'll leave it there. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. And Board Member Gibson.
Thank you, Mr. President. I've got a couple things, but I'd like to start with the question of the capital funding for the Pismo corridor. As I recall, we went after congested corridor funding grant last year, was it?
2 years ago.
2 years ago, and we were unsuccessful.
Unsuccessful.
In that.
Right.
We're planning to come back on that. It seems like a. But the difference here is, I understand our first effort, we were on our own in doing that, and I'm hopeful that when we come to the second application on that, that we have Caltrans in as a co-applicant on that, and as the single largest priority, the single most important priority within the county is that congestion headed to South County. I was hoping we could get Caltrans on board to help us push this over the
Yeah, we have been in discussions with SLOCUG staff. You know, Caltrans obviously supports the corridor. We're working together with you on it. As far as co-applicants, I actually just talked to Pete on Monday, trying to figure out what the rules will be. In years past, there's been a total of three that we were allowed to co-apply in the state, which is a very high hurdle to overcome.
That's plenty. This is a high priority.
And you're only asking one, I realize.
Yeah, exactly.
So we'll continue to champion and see what that actually translates into.
Okay. Well, it's a matter of priorities, and I think this board has been pretty clear as to where the priority lies on this. And that actually leads me to my second point. If you go to Table 4, you look at the third program, the third project there is Highway 46 Antelope Grade, which is the final segment of 46 to turn to four lanes. And if you look in the notes to the right of that, there apparently had been a grant application made for funding of that segment. And in there, it indicates that if awarded, SLOCOG to match $2 million in the 2020 RTIP. My concern with that is that commitment of $2 million was not discussed by this board. And in fact, explicitly when we talked about our commitment of, I think it was $2.5 million to fund the improvements at the Y, we very explicitly indicated that we were not discussing any commitment to any further four-laning of 46. And so this was made, and I cut that in the notes, and I talked to staff about it yesterday, and this was a decision that was made by staff. And I have a problem with that on a couple of levels. First of all is the fundamental protocol of that. This commitment of these precious transportation dollars has to be made by this board in considering its priorities. And second is the matter of priorities. And I've been, as you've heard me mention, I think almost at every meeting, we need to have an explicit discussion of priorities. If you look in even within tables 2 or 3, you'll see that we have 1.7 million on Highway 46 between the 46 West potential project and the Union Road project. And if it's the desire of this board and our North County representatives to prioritize the Antelope grade, then I think we have to have a conversation of whether that 1.7 million is part of where that should go. But the overall concern that I have is that we did not have a board discussion of that. Staff is aware of my concerns, and as I understand it, the grant funding was not successful in that, so the question is moot at this point. But I did want to bring that to attention of my colleagues for the future. That we need to be ahead of this, and we need to have this discussion in public. Thank you, Mr. President.
Okay, thank you. And Board Member Arnold, Rich, please.
That was a lot of information you just gave us. So just to summarize the beginning of your presentation, you were talking just about the SB1 money, and in generally speaking, after all of that, you're telling us that we cannot expect, and we don't really know when we can expect a lot of that SB1 funding to land here in our region. Is that what you're telling us?
I'm saying this particular funding cycle, they've done the math, and the math says we're in an adjustment from all the factors that we highlighted in the staff report and I attempted to articulate. So this is an adjustment cycle, and that come 2022, part of the argument with SB1 as it relates to the state highway count is that it's going to stabilize it, and that there will be at some point in time a fixed number for the state highway count that we can pretty well plan for.
Okay,
and
but that's
what that was the number that we called out back in April.
Right.
And we weren't the only RTPA. I mean, I feel stupid about it, but I know that all the RTPAs were caught on their heels.
Well, you must have expected it. I mean, there was a lot of talk statewide about how this money, what it was, you know, the voters voted this, if it passed, people could expect this, that, and the other thing. So I think you were basing your assumptions on all that. So that leads me then to ask you, it sounds like what you were telling us is, so the SB1 passed, new money came in, it wasn't as much as expected because of lower fuel consumption.
And that, yes.
But we don't know. That's the crystal ball we don't have for the future. So when you talk about 2022,
right, so
we don't know.
Could there be a recession? Could there be all kinds of factors?
Okay, but what we did see after SB1 passed, some of it then, unexpectedly, it sounds like, to the local jurisdictions, went to backfill things that needed to be backfilled, and some of it went to projects. What you were saying, it was advanced to projects. So who made those decisions? Was that all CTC?
That was California Transportation Commission.
Okay, so they just kind of got that money in. Oops, this isn't as much as we'd hope, but we're going to go ahead and kind of spend it real quick or allocate it. Is that...
Well, so for using the one that we competed in, this congested corridors program, they allocated out 4 years of funds as opposed to, say, 2. And so because of the reasonable assumption that that program is stable, it's going to be funded, but there was such a backlog of need that they took advantage of the opportunity to get a lot of projects on moving and on the street. And with that came a great deal of local funding commitment to match these state grants, and some of those local funding commitments came right out of the STIP, and so they advanced some STIP money against these SB1 programs, and that was just one of several factors. It's not the only factor.
But I guess we could summarize this by saying a lot of the decisions that were made in Sacramento, and here we are just waiting as a local entity. Okay, and then what else? What, the other thing I was just going to ask you, that $25 million you talked about for the Vantage Lane in Pismo, that's just for the 101.
That's just the 101.
Construction. 101. Should we get to that point?
Right.
And my last question is, you talked about the changes in alignment on the Tascadero-Templeton connector.
Yeah.
is that the second time or something that the alignment's been changed, correct?
I honestly couldn't tell you if it's the second or third time.
But anyway, my point is, what is going on? We spend money on design, and then we change. What is causing that to happen?
Well, so the project was clearly going to be beyond reach under the current design alignment.
Okay,
due to the undercrossing, the subway undercrossing, and some of the construction management techniques that the UP is insisting happen. They call it a shoe fly. And it was it would have been asking this board to find $3 million more of discretionary dollars to make that project whole. So we weren't about to go down that path with the county. And so the county parks, which was that was their preferred alignment, they chatted with Public Works. Public Works had some discussions with Caltrans and with respect to right-of-way and encroachment permits, and they heard loud and clear they can't go that route. To pinch it in between UP, the railroad, and the highway. And so they're looking at a new approach, which is, and I don't even have the right terminology for this because it's probably going to make some of us go, what? But it's eminent domain against the railroad to have access within their easement. And so that is the current approach in which they're moving forward with.
So it just
and
seems
then, and so that alignment requires new redesign.
$250,000, you said.
$250,000.
So each time we kind of hit a brick wall, so I'm just thinking, wow, we better start looking at the brick walls a little closer before we spend money out on design.
Right, so there's approximately $5 million committed money for construction for this
We just
project.
Have to get the design right.
And just got to get the design right.
Okay, thank you for answering those questions.
It is on the list of $33 million. We have $2 million from this entity here.
Well, and it has been in the pipeline a long time.
I'm not saying it's something.
And it is funded. We just have to get the design right. Okay, thank you.
And board member Govins wanted to respond.
Thank you, Chair. I was just going to clarify before the board feels too powerless that decisions are all made somewhere else. Yes, it's true. The Board of Equalization didn't take action that actually the law said they should back in 2016, and so funds weren't generated per the last fund estimate. And so since the last fund estimate had then overestimated how much was coming in, we have to make up that difference. But as far as advancing, in the 2018 STIP, everybody was given a target. This board actually programmed almost $1,800,000 or so above target. So you were able to use some of the other people's money. And then they also allowed project development activities to occur. So again, you chose to program almost $2.5 million of that. And so when this year's targets came, they were a lot reduced. And so the target for this county was somewhere in the $3 million range. I don't have it in front of me. However, this board had advanced that much just for this county's work. So it wasn't that CTC took it and put it in LA so that they could advance something down there. It was all the counties were looking forward to this growing pot of money. And it has grown just because of some other factors, not quite as much as we had hoped. Some of the things are good reasons. People are buying and using less fuel. That helps us with greenhouse gas and other state goals. However, with the revenue tied to it, it gave us an increase in our funding we had, just not as much of an increase as we'd been counting on. I don't know if that helps clarify, but I did want to explain because it seemed like it was getting a little muddled.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Okay, Board Member Hill wants to make a brief comment.
Just a brief question for Mr. Govins. I appreciate that. So is it safe to say then, Tim, if the Proposition 6, I guess, had passed and SB1 was killed, that the money that had been advanced to us would either have to come back or we would be getting nothing for a while?
Unfortunately, I think we would be back where we were in 2016 of actually saying, here's what we have programmed for the remaining 3 years of the STIP.
Right.
And we can't afford it. And so statewide, we're looking at $750 million of unprogramming rather than any new programming. We may very well have been there. Yes.
Okay. Board Member Paulding.
Thank you. I appreciate the presentation. Yeah. Just a couple of quick questions. At the top of the list, as a representative of the City of Rio Grande, of course, I'm appreciative to this board and staff for the continued commitment to the Briscoe Interchange Project. On the bottom of the list, on Table 4 specifically, we see the new PIDs for Traffic Way and Fair Oaks Interchange, and each of the boxes are checked in terms of scope, budget, and schedule. I just wanted to make sure that what we're talking about there is specifically for the PID, and was wondering exactly how much in funding has been committed in that direction.
Yes, so under our, this correlates back to the regional programs that we've called out in Table 2. There's one in there for project initiation documents. We've set aside $400,000 over 3 years, and we also have a balance of funding in that account. And so this is to identify for purposes of this is really actually.
If I can help you out, Rich.
Please.
On the bottom of page B1-5, on row 3D, there's $400,000 for PIDs programmed.
So we have funding committed as part of our recommendation, and this is essentially identifying the next generation of priorities, the next of PID priorities. Clearly, the city is, and the actions occurring with the closures at of the four at-grade intersections, and the discussion of the city circulation element, and the thought of the sub-regional circulation in the Napoma Mesa. We have committed some resources in the neighborhood of $150,000 to $200,000, because all these PIDs come in at a different cost, to develop the concept documents so that it coincides with your circulation element and the county circulation element for a solution in that portion of the South County. It doesn't get us anywhere beyond sort of an agreed upon range of alternatives, and hopefully embracing one or two sooner than later, so that if the will is there to go to the next step, which is investing in the environmental phase and investing in the design phase, then these documents have to be done, and the will has to be demonstrated by the local agency.
Excellent. Thank you.
Board Member Wagi.
Yes, I was, like Supervisor Gibson, I was also concerned about some reluctance or some uncertainty whether Caltrans District 5 would support the Pismo Beach Congestion Relief Project. It sounds like it's kind of some rules and regulations, how you go about it. And I'm also concerned about the fact, even though it's congestion relief, that congestion causes a lot of accidents. Our police and fire, sometimes our police are first on scene, our police and fire are responding to several accidents along that stretch, and that takes our police and fire up away from their normal duties, besides the additional congestion from the accidents as well as public safety issue. So is there anything we can do to help make sure we can get that support?
No, and again, I'm the manager at the local level, and I'm telling you, we support, we see what's happening on 101, we see that. As I happen to mention, I have a new secretary that's about a month in the job. I don't have a chief deputy or director in a permanent slot yet. And so, similar to this board, they will give their 12 district directors direction, and we will probably choose somewhere around three projects statewide to actually be the nominators of. I will compete this for that, but I don't know what the competition is. I don't know what their goals are. I mean, I'm speaking a little frankly.
Sure.
So yes, you will have our support. We're working together on it. We're actually delivering the project. As far as whether it's a Caltrans nomination or we're just in support of the SLOCOG nomination and what the criteria are, CTC is still working on their guidelines for their competitive programs. So how well it fits in the guidelines compared to everything else in the state. I don't want to commit to something that's a little beyond my knowledge at this point. But you have our support. It's just I don't know that I'm signing the application. It may be this board.
I mean, it's one of the major north-south corridors. It's not just a regional issue. If something happens to 5, we get impacted as well.
So we're
much beyond our county.
Right. We're fortunate in this district. The five counties we have, the RTPAs and the MPOs there, have actually banded together, as I think this board has heard, with the Central Coast Coalition.
Right.
It has been very successful. We have raised the profile of 101. When CTC, they have their meetings around the state, and they can't always get to locations like this that that other people can't easily come to. They choose certain locations, but they do town halls. They did a town hall up in Gonzales, mm-hmm. and really the Central Coast Coalition, the five counties, were able to highlight 101 as the backbone. backbone of the state. Right. Exactly as you say, the five, the everything else that there's. And CTC's really had the attention of the safety, the reliability, and everything we need.
Thank you. Just another comment. You mentioned there's no barriers to getting the EIR through, but if you find any problems, I know the city of Pismo Beach will probably be one of the reviewers. If there's any issues on any of those points, please let us know.
Absolutely.
Okay, Board Member Moreno.
Thank you, Mr. President. Going back to the Tascadero-Templeton connector, it says the funding secures. The 3.3 is from some ATP funds, but the other $2 million seems to be part of this $14 million.
No, the other two, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but the other two is part of the $33 million that's committed.
Okay, so it's not something that we're re-deciding later. It's committed. So it's at risk because of the $250,000 that's needed for the redesign.
Right.
Given that there's potential UP eminent domain, I see a couple of bridges in there. Are we expecting, I mean, if we're realistic, do we think it's going to cost significantly more? Where might those funds come from? Would we save because was the previous design, was that maybe a little more pricey, a little more scenic, and now we're doing something a little more streamlined? What do we see as the potential for either increased cost or potential savings?
That's a fine question with respect to final engineer's estimate. And if you're not at 35, oh, here we have Dave Flynn on the spot. Good timing.
Hi, good morning. Dave Flynn with County Public Works Department. We've been working with our Parks Department on this project for some time, and our aim is to bring it within the budget, both the $3.3 million of the ATP and the $2 million of STIP. We've worked closely with a consultant to get estimates to define what those two bridges that you mentioned, as well as the processing time necessary to get the property from the railroad. It is a considerable effort, but we've laid out a schedule. We see it as very viable. We know that this is an important connection for the North County and is something that we would see moving forward for construction at least by 2022.
Okay, so moving forward by 2022 and then being, because this, I think it said it's pushing it out about a year. When do you anticipate it being complete?
It would probably begin in the spring of 2022 and then be finished sometime by the end of 22,
okay.
Early 23.
Okay, so less than a year.
Yeah, for that construction, correct.
Wonderful. Okay, thank you.
Vice President Pichon.
I just want to thank you for continuing to keep the Templeton Atascadero. I've had many meetings on this. This is the Union Pacific issue, and I think the new design is going to work well. And this is, by the way, Eric Greening and my favorite project that we're discussing today. So I know that this is a headache for such a small project, but appreciate you keeping it on there.
Okay, and I guess I'm going to be last. I am the president of SLOCOG, so many times I'm advocating for our entire region at the state and federal level, but I also represent Paso Robles. So I'm going to talk to you offline about 46 West and 101 on a couple of things because it's a sequential situation, and I see one has $0, but it's preliminary to the other one that you're scheduling sometime in the next decade with a question mark. I'll talk to you offline on that and try to get that clarified. But I did have a question, too, on the local choice money. $822,000 per jurisdiction. Right. If not, why even bother among eight jurisdictions?
Well, so the 822 is an urban apportionment that's been established at the time federal transportation legislation was enacted under ICE-T in 1993, I think it was. The number hasn't shifted in as many years as...
So is that the total amount available to everybody?
That is the total amount for urban allocation, and we apportion that out based on population road mile calculation. It's been the same math. We come back, and so why we give you the opportunity to call it local choice is it's your opportunity, perhaps with SB1 monies now in your coffers for street and road maintenance, you can, rather than putting this right to street and road maintenance, it's one small opportunity to use it to leverage either a grant or to do your own betterments if it's a safe route to school or a pedestrian betterment or what have you. It's not a lot, but we do try to do a CIP so that you could pool your 3 years of apportionment. Let's say it's $40,000 a year, you have $120,000. So rather than taking it annually, we would give the each agency the opportunity to pool their their allotment.
I see. I'm just looking at our estimated costs on these projects.
I know.
And that amount looks like, you know, pocket change.
Yeah.
All right. We'll open it to the public. We have one request to speak, and that's Karen Adelot. Karen, if you come up and give us the chance to hear your wisdom or questions.
Thank you very much. Yes, I am Karen Adelot, and I'm here representing the Friends of the Bob Jones Trail. And first of all, I'd like to thank you because you've had a strong commitment to the Bob Jones Trail, and we're very grateful for that. As you know, completing the Bob Jones Trail has been a priority for many, many years, and it hasn't been completed, and it looks like it's a ways off. And there are so many people who have told us repeatedly how important it is and how much they would like to see it finished, and it still seems like a bit of a dream. But your commitment to the trail for the $350,000 that's needed to complete the design is a very important piece of getting the 4.5-mile section from where the trail head is now to the Octagon Barn, which is just about ready to open, and that will increase the demand, along with the fact that kids in Avalo will be attending C.L. Smith. It becomes a safe route to schools, which is could be very important way to go back and forth to school safely, not to mention those of us who just love the area and would like to have access to it safely. When completed, as you know, the trail will provide safe, scenic bicycle and pedestrian routes. It's going to be 12 feet wide, which is a huge improvement, and it'll have a broad range of local users as well as people who use it just for pleasure, for going to school, but also a lot of people will use it as part of their commute, which gets them off Highway 101, not in their cars, gets them off 227, which is a freaking nightmare. I have to cross it every day. And even if you have noticed, Orcott has become a 65-mile-an-hour way to get back and forth. So having the Bob Jones Trail is one way we can support a different form of transportation. We appreciate that you've allocated the funding and the document for the construction documents, the consulting services for the trail extension a year ago, but the amount only covers 65%, and the $35,000 that's needed will finish it to 100%. And several of the people of the Friends of the Bob Jones Trail worked on the application, ATP application, to help the county have as much information as possible. We got more points, and we can sort of see how we could get more points, but it'll be very, very important to be shovel ready, and we're also working on the need to have all the property lined up. We have a little catch there, but we are working on it. So I would just like to commit you to finish. Thank you very much to support it. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Okay. And is there, yes.
Yes, thank you. I just wanted to reiterate a couple of final points that Rich made.
See if there's anybody else from the public first?
Sure.
Is there anybody else? I don't have any more speaker slips, but okay. Now proceed. We'll close the public hearing and bring it back.
So I just wanted to close by sort of reiterating where we are in the process. And I think Rich had a good analogy when we first started talking about the 2020 STIP. And we're at the point where we're dealing with this jigsaw puzzle where we have pieces all over the county that are projects. And we've basically turned over the pieces of the puzzle, and we've outlined the jigsaw puzzle and grouped things in colors, and we know where we are. But there's a big add-on, which is these competitive discretionary grants. So we're trying to do our programming in the next 2 to 3 months, work session in September and programming in October, and put that jigsaw puzzle together so that we're best able to compete for discretionary statewide projects. And we're at a competitive disadvantage because 88% of the state's population is a self-help county, and they can over-leverage and secure the state competitive resources. And then I wanted to sort of follow up with Supervisor Hill, who indicated that we weren't moving as fast as we could on the Managed Lane project. We do have a gap in funding, and that'll be back in the workshop in September. We'll find out the dollar amount that we're short on design, because as you can see in I don't expect you all to commit this graphic on the bottom of B1-7 to memory, but we need to get to design. We need to get through that goldenrod design phase so that we're ready to construct before we can put large capital resources on that project. And then finally, I wanted to just acknowledge that we've heard loud and clear on the overcommitment of the $2 million in RTIP. At the point in time that we submitted the infra grant for $82 million on Antelope Grade, we thought we had $29 million that would come back to this board to decide whether or not we wanted to put in $2 million to track that $82 million. And in order to, we see it as our role to find federal money, to find state money, and in this grant program, a local match was required, or otherwise you couldn't submit. So with that, I'll turn it back to the board for any further questions. Okay,
thank you. Board Member Pease.
Thank you, and thank you to staff and all my colleagues up here for the great discussion. I appreciate commitment in pushing to 227. That is certainly a huge pressing issue for us. And I just want to acknowledge also the letter from Leah Brooks that we received in terms of the correspondence that's in support of all the bike and multimodal transportation. I think she is spot on, and that the staff has done a great job of keeping those priorities to keep those projects moving forward. So I'm in support. I don't know if there are other comments, but I'd be happy to move staff recommendation.
Okay, thank you. All right, yes, staff recommendation includes support.
I actually have a question, if I could.
Okay, all right. The action that we're going to be taking or considering is support for draft funding recommendations for Table 2 and Table 4, numbers 3C, 3G, 3H, and directing staff to conduct the board study session in September on projects in process under Attachment A.
Well, second that.
Over there.
Yeah, that's fine. Just a quick question. Regarding the urban apportionments, is that something that this board decides what projects it goes to, or is there a formula where the seven cities and the county get a certain amount of that? How does that work?
Yes, there is a formula. We don't have discretion over those programs. We call them local choice, and it's a statewide formula that I believe we're required to use.
Right, as long as the projects that the city or member agencies would like to have funded with their apportionment comply with Article 19 of the state constitution.
Okay, so obviously if something's in the RTP, it would comply with that.
Yeah.
Okay, and when do we know what that formula looks like?
So we will come back. So some of the programs, like the St. Francis School Program, there's a separate Cycle 3 guidance that's being developed that staff will bring back. The urban apportionment, local choice, we will bring back a separate item of here's the apportionments, here's what the schedule is, et cetera, et cetera.
Thank you.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Yes. Rich?
That was just more to be illustrative. The motion is fine that Fred just read.
Okay. And it's a voice vote. All in favor? Oh, Hill. Member Hill. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. B2, safer, affordable, fuel-efficient vehicle rule.
Good morning, members of the board. My name is Daniel Audello, and I'll be presenting the Safer, Affordable, Fuel-Efficient Vehicle Rule, also known as the SAFE Rule. So what is the SAFE Rule? The SAFE Rule is proposed by the National Highway Traffic...
A little closer to the microphone.
Oh, my bad. The SAFE Rule is proposed by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency with the intent of generating cost savings and reducing vehicle fatalities. The rule would implement a 50-state solution, which would hold the national average fuel efficiency standards at 2020 levels through 2026, which in turn would revoke California's own higher fuel efficiency standards. Going on to the next slide. So if California's higher fuel efficiency standards were to be revoked, then the state's abilities to meet its greenhouse gas reduction goals would be negatively impacted. Furthermore, California transportation agencies use an air quality model known as MFAC, which is reflective of California standards. If California standards were to be invalidated, MFAC would also be invalidated. And without a valid air quality model, 2,000 projects totaling over $130 billion may face project delivery delays or loss of funding. The region would also be affected. A portion of the eastern counties is designated as a non-attainment area. A non-attainment area is an area of the county considered to have worse air quality than the national air quality standards. As an MPO with a non-attainment area, SLOCOG must demonstrate conformity with federal Clean Air Act requirements, and uses MFAC to do so. Without MFAC, SLOCOG would be unable to make new conformity determinations for regional transportation plans, federal transportation improvement programs, or projects, or amendments to projects in the RTP or the FTIP, which can ultimately lead to project delivery delays or loss of funding for those projects. So the timeline of the rule. The rule was sent to the Office of Management and Budget, which is typically one of the last steps in the federal rulemaking process. In June 2019, SLOCOG, along with other concerned parties, sent letters of concern to the U.S. EPA and to the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration. The key date to look at is probably that last one that says unknown, but we recently received an update saying that the SAFE rule is expected to be finalized by Labor Day 2019, which is September 2nd. Currently, there is not a solution to any of the impacts that I have laid out here, but SLOCOG will continue to monitor the SAFE rules progression and any guidance that emerges. This is an information item only, so the recommendation is to receive information.
Okay, thank you very much.
Yep.
Any questions on my left? On my right? I have one.
Yes.
And that is, there was a press report that the vehicle manufacturers are going to comply with California's regulations in any event. Does that have any effect upon your particular actions and reports?
So I've read several letters of opposition to the rule from some of the automakers, and I've seen probably the same report that you did about some of the automakers continuing to comply. It would not affect it, as we would still need a valid air quality model. So automakers can do what they want to do, but complying to the standards and modeling that out with a valid air quality model is another issue altogether.
Okay, thank you. All right, we'll open to the public then.
Eric
Greeny has submitted a request.
Thank you, Eric Greening. This is certainly an example of something which, on the rhetoric level, passes as regulatory relief, but on the practical level, passes as total headache for all concerned. An additional issue with this, which I hope will activate every jurisdiction to do what they can to oppose this, is basically any CEQA determinations where air quality projections for the life of the general plan, the project, or whatever it is, based on traffic and assumptions about what kind of pollution would be generated by that traffic, could be called into question by this, because more pollution can be emitted than would have been the case otherwise. And so this could be a tremendous headache in each jurisdiction for that reason. So I would just encourage as much noise as possible about this. I am happy to see the automakers basically saying, we thought we knew what the ground rules were going to be, we'd like to comply with them. We'll just, as citizens and as jurisdictions, take it from there. But whoever thought this would be a favor to jurisdictions, a favor to automakers, a favor to the public, all of whom breathe, by the way, was very grossly mistaken. Thank you.
Thank you. That was an information item, so we thank you for your information. And I'm going to call about a 10-minute recess right now so that... Those who need a break can take one. We'll reconvene by 10 o'clock. All right, I'll call this meeting back in order, and I'll make a quick announcement before we start. We found a parking structure tag here somewhere on the floor. So anybody in the parking structure that doesn't have your particular slip, please let it might be yours. Okay, there we go. That took care of it.
Yeah, that makes sense. Right.
All right. Very good. So we'll come back to order, and we're going into our area-wide items. Item C1, contracts between SLOCOG and Cambria Community Council Incorporated for Cambria Community Bus, and between SLOCOG and Wiltshire Health and Community Services Incorporated for the Wiltshire Good Neighbor Program.
Please. Good morning, President Strong and members of the board. I'm Sarah Woolsey, SLOCOG staff. Today I'll be presenting two contracts, like Fred said, one with the Cambria Community Council and one with Wiltshire Health and Community Services. A little bit of background, these two programs came out of our 2015 Coordinated Human Services Public Transportation Plan. And that's the guiding document which guides our mobility programs and services for seniors and individuals with disabilities. So volunteer driver programs have the ability to operate at a lower cost than other demand response transportation services. The two projects presented today came out of our second call for projects for this program. During our first call for projects, $3,900 was awarded, and out of a total of $50,000 available. The additional $46,100 was held and put out to bid with this call for projects. And in April, we added $35,000 to that pot, making a total of $81,100 available for award through this call for projects. Two applications were received from the call for projects. A total of $121,100 was asked for. The applications were reviewed by one representative from each of our Transportation Advisory Council committees, as well as one SLOCOG staff member. The recommendations that came out of that group are consistent with the recommendations being provided today. So the first organization being recommended for funding today is the Cambria Community Council, and it's for their Cambria Community Bus program. The Cambria Community Bus consists of two airport-type buses, like the photo above. Both of them are ADA equipped, and all of their drivers in that photo are volunteers. The buses service the communities of Cambria and San Simeon. Riders can go shopping for food and other necessities. They can go to doctor's appointments, hair appointments, post office, bank, and other basics for living on their own. One bus operates during the week locally, and the other bus operates going to SLO twice a month on a Tuesday and once a month to Paso and Templeton during another Tuesday of the month. On the out-of-town trips, medical appointments do take precedent over other rides, and service is door-to-door Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 4:30. Riders must call the dispatcher at least one day in advance for a scheduled ride, and all rides are free. Riders must be at least 55 years of age or temporarily disabled. The Cambria Community Council applied for $40,000 for half the cost of their new vehicle that they is a 2003 vehicle that needs replacing. Then it will need new signage, and some of the funding will also go towards marketing their services. I have Tony and Warren here today from the Cambria Community Council, and I've let them know that they're welcome to come up and say a few words if they'd like to. Here they are.
My name is Warren Gay, and I've been doing this bus since 96. The bus in Cambria has been running since 1980, which is a long time. During that time, the SLOCOG and the Board of Supervisors have been extremely supportive of our program, and I just want to thank you for that.
Hi, my name is Tony Church. I've been with the operation now for 6 years, and I'm very, very proud of our service. We enable a lot of very elderly people to make life normal for themselves, and I thank you for considering this.
All right, thank you, Warren and Tony. We also are recommending funding for Wilshire Health and Community Services for their Good Neighbor program, which is a bit of a different program where volunteers drive their own cars and pick up rides by using a software to match riders and individuals that are drivers, excuse me. This service is available countywide 7 days a week, but is dependent on volunteer driver availability. Wilshire applied for all $81,100 available, and noting that the funding will support their program for a 28-month period. We are recommending $41,100, which should support the program for over 1 year. These funds will be used for paying for their volunteer coordinator, driver mileage reimbursement, marketing, volunteer training, volunteer appreciation efforts, and other office costs. And I've also have Tracy here today from the Wilshire program, and I've offered her a minute too.
Thank you so much. I just wanted to take a moment to thank SLOCOG and this board for supporting Wilshire Community Services' Good Neighbor program. As experts in the field of aging, we have identified transportation as one of the key factors to maintaining wellness and allowing people to age in place. This grant will allow us the opportunity to expand our volunteer driver program so that we can provide more services to older adults and adults with disabilities so they can get to critical appointments such as doctor's appointments, grocery shopping, and those types of things. Major improvements in wellness are achieved when transportation options are available. This unique transportation option provides door-through-door transportation assistance. So for those people who just need a little extra help, either carrying groceries or getting to their doctor's appointments, our volunteers are available to provide that connection. It also is an amazing way to address isolation issues, which can also impact wellness factors. Volunteers provide a very important connection to the clients they serve. So I want to thank you so much for continuing to support Wilshire Community Services, older adults, and adults with disabilities in our community.
All right, so there are two recommendations today, A and B. One, to approve the first contract with the Cambria Community Council for an amount not to exceed $40,000. And recommendation B is to approve the contract between SLOCOG and Wilshire Health and Community Services for an amount, $41,100 on item B. Sorry about that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, wonderful. First of all, any questions or comments here? Yes, Pete.
Yeah, I just wanted to add that about a year and a half ago, we went through the hard work of going from a block grant to the CTSA to a services level contract. And as part of that, we were able to secure funds for volunteer driver programs. And our human services plan that we did about 2 years ago said this is the most cost-effective way to move people from point A to point B. We know that the gray tsunami is coming, and so we feel that setting aside these $50,000 a year is a wise investment. I'm there, too. It's not the pot.
Well, thank you for that. I'm the foam on the top of the tsunami. I would also add, I cut you off, and this has a staff recommendation or an approval from all of our advisory councils. So.
Yes.
Mr. President, I don't know if you're going to open for any other public comment.
Yes, I am.
Once you do, I'd be pleased to
Okay, very good. I'll open it, but I have no speaker requests. Therefore, we'll close it, bring it back.
I'm happy to move staff's recommendation as amended here. In particular, the Cambria Community Bus has been an extraordinary program for nearly 40 years and a model, I think, for other communities to emulate, and I hope they do. I know Wilshire also does fine work. So this is money well expended on a number of fronts and gets people where they need to be.
Very good. So that's a single motion for both.
Yes.
Second. Yes. And we have a second. And it's a roll call vote, please.
Board Member Gibson?
Yes.
Board Member Pease?
Yes.
Board Member Arnold?
Yes.
Board Member Compton?
Yes.
Board Member Davis?
Yes.
Board Member Hill?
Yes.
Board Member Lee?
Yes.
Board Member Moreno?
Yes.
Board Member Paulding?
Yes.
Board Member Waggy?
Yes.
Vice President Pichon?
Yes.
President Strong?
Yes. All right. We'll move on to item C2. C1. Or that's what we just did. C2. Housing Planning and Production Grants Program, AB 101.
Thank you. Members of the board, good morning. I'm James Wortley, SLOCOG staff. This is the Housing Planning and Production Grants Program item. The governor signed a new law just last week. This is the Assembly Bill 101. It provides jurisdictions and regions with one-time funding for planning activities to enable our jurisdictions to meet their housing targets. It's administered by the Housing and Community Development Department. There's really three pots or silos of funds in this new law. $125 million is available statewide as direct allocations to our local jurisdictions. By population, the county will receive $500,000. Our three larger cities will receive $150,000 each, and our four smaller cities, $65,000 each. The purpose is to update planning documents, housing elements, general plans, infrastructure planning, revamp the local planning process, and a few other things. The second pot, also $125 million, is going to be divvied up among eight mega regions throughout the state. The San Luis Obispo County area is within the Central Coast mega region. We're with Santa Barbara, Santa Cruz, San Benito, and Monterey. Those are all the counties in District 5 for Caltrans districts. Our population allotment is $6.5 million, but the state and this law offered up a $2 million bonus for our partnership efforts. This is all estimated, of course. We need to identify a COG to be the fiscal agent. We also need to identify three elected officials within our region to be on this Central Coast working group. The working group will coordinate to identify the appropriate use or sub-allocation of the funds. In the staff report, you may have seen the regional action plan that the working group would create. That language has been removed for the final law that was signed. And the purpose of these funds will be to develop RENA plans, planning and grant programs, infrastructure planning, or local housing trust funds. A third pot that I don't have a slide for is actually a $500 million grant available for infrastructure infill projects. SLOCOG is pretty far along in our process with the RENA. We'll be seeking adoption in October, and we're further along than just about every other COG in the state for our sixth cycle. I think Shasta COG is a little bit ahead of us. San Diego COG is 6 months behind us, and everybody else is a year or more behind for their sixth cycle. Also in our region, our housing elements have started moving forward for development. We have RFPs for many of the jurisdictions. We have consultants on boards for others. So we're really pleased with how fast we're moving on that. We have a county effort that's being led by county staff to look at regional infrastructure and housing needs plan, and SLOCOG, as well as the city's staffs, are engaged in that effort as well. And now we have this mega regional effort. With these things coming together and our positioning, I think we're in very good shape to compete for this $500 million grant opportunity. There's $200 million available right now this fiscal year to apply for. we'll still have to figure out what the grant application will require, how great our need is, what's the bang for the buck, what do we have to offer, really, is what we're going to be competing against statewide, because everybody else is going to be having trouble hitting their affordable housing targets as well. At this point in time, this staff recommendation is to receive the information, but to also identify one supervisor to represent the region on the Central Coast Working Group. We're expecting 3 or 4 meetings that would be with our counterparts, the other four counties, so there's 15 members on this working group. Also, in the state law, we're to have 2 members of our working group selected by the City Selection Committee. We're looking to have that meeting held a month from now to appoint 2 city representatives, one from a large city and one from one of our smaller cities, to this working group as well. And then lastly, AMBAG has offered to act as the mega region's fiscal agent. Staff's recommending that we accept their offer as well. And that concludes presentation. Any questions?
Okay. Any questions? Yes.
Just a couple of quick questions. $6.5 million expected to the mega region. That money is all for planning. Does any of it go directly into construction of housing?
Some of it, I believe, can go into like a housing trust fund, if that works for construction of. I mean, but a lot of it is for planning, developing the documents, improving the planning processes. And it's not $6.5 million, it's $8.5 million, $6.5 million plus the $2 million bonus.
Okay, but again, the question is whether, you know, we know what needs to be done. We need to get money in the hands of people who can build housing. And so the question is whether this mega region activity is, you know, is actually functional in terms of getting that done.
And it's going to come down to those 15 elected members that are going to hammer it out with the working group. What are the priorities for those members to place, where to place the money? So it could be for planning. I think that some would use it for arena development, but I don't.
I mean, everything that's in the staff report suggests it's just planning money or arena development money, which doesn't get it done. And the second question is of the $500 million, which is in direct investment in infrastructure and housing. Same issue to be solved there. Do we know whether any or all of that is going through the mega region, or is that on a simple, straight competitive basis by jurisdiction?
I believe its jurisdictions will apply for it, and it will apply to HCD directly.
Okay, thank you.
Member Hill.
I want to follow up on that, too, because I think it's a critical point, James, and maybe we can get clarification after this, on that use of that money, because, for instance, in our community, we have housing authorities and nonprofits that can actually entrust, that can take that money and apply it to affordable housing projects that are in the works. So the clarification, I think, would be, no jurisdiction, I think, is short of planning. It's short of money to actually go to build units. So I think that would be really critical for us to know as we move forward, because I would love to serve on this if we were doing something for housing. If it's doing something to come up with a bunch of arena plans for, not really that exciting.
Board Member Arnold.
Yeah. James, will you help me remember? We took a vote on this board did, to whether to participate in the mega regional group or not. And I thought we had decided amongst ourselves that we would rather kind of control our own destiny in that regard. Am I remembering that right?
With the way the law is written, we're either part of the mega region, we are part of the mega region.
Correct.
We
but that's what I'm asking. The way the law is written, there is an opportunity to belong to this mega region, or do we have to belong whether we chose to or not?
We do belong to the mega region.
So they have jurisdiction over us whether we participate or not. In other words, I'm reading in the staff plan that they have some authority, or it's almost worded like authority, to do some planning, arena planning.
Not, kind of? Not
Are
really
they acting as an advisory, this mega?
I take it as if we participate, we get our opportunity to get our fair share of funds out of this mega region.
So they definitely have authority to allocate funding.
To decide the allocation among to the five counties.
But what's interesting to me is you have a board of 15. Of that, we're three. So if we're outvoted that this is where the money needs to be appropriated in a bigger population center or something like that, we're kind of a minority in that regard.
Every county would be that way, yeah.
AB 101 gives some funding to this body, no matter what. It's aside from the mega, whatever we're calling it, mega group. Correct. We get some funding.
To which body?
This body,
SLOCOG. No. It gives money to the county. It gives money to each of the cities. And then it gives money to the mega region. The mega region working group will decide who gets the money.
When I'm looking at local, it's grant opportunities. Local jurisdiction grants of the $250 million available under the new program, $125 will be available directly for local jurisdictions. Then it goes into the mega region.
$125 goes to the
mega region. And the other $125 goes to the mega region. So I'm talking about the first $125.
That's absolutely yours to control. Your $500,000 that goes to the county would be your decisions to figure out how to use it. The $150,000, $65,000 that goes to the larger and smaller cities, respectively, is for them.
But that first $125 goes out amongst, so it's not SLOCOG, but it's
correct.
Local.
Yep.
And it's local to use. The second $125 is the mega region. Mm-hmm. And then we are a minority, as are all the other five districts, mm-hmm. other four. In deciding and making decisions. And we had chosen, really, we'd rather take on our own situation back a while. But what I'm trying to ask you these questions for is how much are we committed to belonging to the, it's just take the $125 or leave it, the ability to tap into it, or is it you must participate in this mega region body?
I don't see that you must participate, but it's certainly to our advantage to participate and do our best to argue for our fair share of those funds.
Okay, and then my next question is, so we say, okay, there's $125 million on the line divided by five counties. We can participate to chase that or not, and we choose to yes. Let's, what the heck, we might as well. Then we're sitting on this body that is making these decisions, so they can make a decision that it all goes to three of the five counties or not, I'm sorry I didn't highlight this, but there was a sentence in here that talked about planning, that this body will do some planning. The mega region will coordinate to identify the appropriate use of funds or sub-allocations and or appropriately address its unique housing and planning priorities. This may result in a mega regional plan that addresses the previously, a mega regional plan. What I'm worried about is by participating that we get caught up in a mega regional plan that isn't in our best interest here in this county. That's what I'm asking.
So the law that was signed dropped the reference to the regional action plan, the mega regional action plan. The body, the Central Coast Working Group, would still determine whether it's through some kind of plan or through a simple population distribution, some allocation process to send money from the $8.5 million to the priorities of that mega region working group. It might be as simple as saying, we've got five counties and SLOCOG has 18% of the population, you get 18% of the money.
But that's a decision this body will make.
That's a decision this body will make.
We don't know what this body's going to decide.
That's correct. That's why we want to send three good representatives to argue for us best we can.
But I'm still looking at the math, 15-3. And just saying, we take a chance. I just wonder how much of a chance we take. Yes, we'll participate. Does that mean we're going to agree to the other 12 of you, whatever you decide, hopefully you're going our way. But, right? I'm just trying to figure out the risk involved in, are we agreeing to something by joining this group? I get it that there's money involved. That's always a carrot. Yeah. But still, if we're going to be, there's going to be regional plans kind of forced upon us, and we are in a minority on the vote, that can be a risk.
So I think I caught where your angle is now. my initial reaction was the risk is not participating, we lose out on all the money. But
the money. But that, is that the that,
that's
the,
one of the risks. But the other risk of, hey, if they come up with a plan that's way beyond what we want to see, then it's put upon us to use it. And I don't think that's what's going to happen. I think that, from my standpoint, my expectation is we have arena plan that's ready to be adopted in October. We have principles that have been adopted already in that plan. We are further along than everybody else. If anything, they're going to use our plan as a starting point, if not an ending point.
Oh, I get that. And that's my point, too. We have been taking care of ourselves as a county. Now we're going to be put into a region that we're pretty unique compared. I mean, we have five counties. That's a lot. And all of them have more of a population and more urban issues than we do. So there can be there's upsides and downsides for us to jumping into a big pond as a small fish. That's all I'm saying. And I'm wondering how much we'll be held to what these others decide for us and how much of our independence, because we've been very successful. Are we going to give up our independence? And that's my question. So thank you for answering my question.
Board Member Compton.
So you said we were further along with our arena plans. So assuming all the cities and everything are on board and we're all in agreement how to split those numbers, is there an advantage in being further along into getting this grant money or not?
I think so. I hope so. I think that if I were putting the grant package together as a staff member from Housing Community Development Department, I'd be looking at who has their sixth cycle already, RENA, adopted. What are your principles? Do you have buy-off by all your jurisdictions? Are you making headway to having your housing elements approved to accommodate that? These are all things that we're doing right now that are sister agencies to the north and south haven't started yet.
When is the deadline for everybody to have completed RENA plans?
We are all on different deadlines. So our deadline is really December. We're looking to adopt in October. Santa Barbara won't see their unit determination that we had ours last November. They won't see theirs for probably about a year from now.
Okay.
And Monterey Bay Association of Governments, I think, is 2 years behind that.
Okay, so then there would be an advantage in being done before, because it would seem to me that this body is going to determine in deciding where the money is going to go. I would think their primary goal would be where we can put the most homes, if that's the goal of the RENA numbers, to put more housing. So it seems like our area would lose out on that because we're not going to have the amount of homes in our RENA number that some of the other people we're competing against or jurisdictions we're competing against will have. So it's just odd to me that how are we going to compete? Now, maybe on the issue of we're done first, but how are we going to compete when you've got other jurisdictions that can place way more homes, or at least plan for them, maybe not build them, but the goal is in the RENA numbers, just you have to plan for that housing. You don't have to build it, but plan for it. They have way bigger RENA numbers than us.
Oh, yeah. But
so wouldn't the goal be to put the money where the more houses can be built?
It might be one of their goals, but they may also look at splitting it equally or proportionally among those eight mega regions to make sure everybody gets something. I mean, it's yet to be figured out.
Okay.
Board Member Foley.
Yeah, I'd like to just offer a slightly different perspective on this, coming from a small agency perspective, the city of Rio Grande. When we got our last RENA update, we had a number of staff items that they weren't able to get to because of the fact that we're understaffed and we've had to make staffing cuts. So although I agree with my colleagues that we need to be focused on building affordable housing and we have mechanisms to do that, and if the funding can go directly to construction, that's great. For small agencies like ours, some of this staff assistance would be very important and could get us moving on some things that we haven't been able to. So I express support for this opportunity, and I'm of the opinion that if there are funds available, even if it's $1.5 million as projected here, we should be chasing it, not making assumptions that it for some reason wouldn't come to us. I think the structure of this whole process where three elected officials can go and advocate for funds for our region is such that I think the assumption should be that with good advocacy, we would theoretically be able to receive some of the funds, which would go to good use.
Thank you. Board Member Wagner.
Yeah, just more of a technical question. It says that the city selection committee made up of mayors will decide the two city members, one large city, one small city. Do they have to be COG members, or they can be anybody? It seems to be anybody.
So the requirement is that we have one COG member of the three, which one of our supervisors would fill that.
The supervisor obviously will be.
Anybody else along from the city selection committee is fine. I think it's a benefit, though, to have members on that committee that's arguing for our fair share to be very knowledgeable about both the regional housing process and the local housing process.
Yeah, I guess that was my point. I think it'd probably be better to have COG members selected just because I think we're kind of at the cusp of trying to figure out how we're going to solve these things, and probably want someone that's fairly knowledgeable on the committee so they can advocate in a way that we might be successful. Thank you.
Board Member Moreno.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'm trying to understand why or how it is that our being ahead of the game would have any weight with the other agencies. So if I'm looking at the timeline and tasks on C23, it looks like, so July 1, 2020, the deadline for local jurisdictions to request allocation. So that means that of the entire mega region, each of the, basically they'd have to come to this place where, hey, making our pitch, here's what we want, where then all 15 board members can look and say, you know, hey, you're a year out. We can't even rely on this. Do we really want to give you that money? Or they could say, wow, you're a year out. You need more money to do it. And you, San Luis Obispo, are doing just fine. You really don't need the money for planning, so we're going to give it elsewhere. Whatever the decision might be made. So I'm trying to understand why us being further ahead weighs anything with the other four in the region.
It gives us a perspective of how many units we have ahead of us where they don't really know what they're going to have. We have fewer unknowns than they have, at least.
True, but the other 12 members could all say, hey, you've already done your planning and you're ahead, so we need more money to help us plan our numbers. I mean, kind of to Board Member Hill's point, like, we're tired of spending money on planning, but the rest of them could say, well, we need help planning, and more of that money could go to planning in theory. Yeah. I mean, we can say it makes sense if we were applying to the state and said, hey, we're further ahead, that would carry some weight. But with other agencies who are further behind, they're going to say, why should you get more money when we're behind and we need the money to catch up, potentially?
I'm certain every county contingent of three will come up with their best argument to get the most money.
Right.
And we will certainly arm our delegates with the best information we have to counter those arguments and to pitch our own.
And then is the purpose of this board simply to distribute this $8.5 million and then it's done? Or does this something that continues to go on? Are there any? And then secondly, are there any strings attached?
I believe it's just to develop the priorities and then it's done. Okay. And in the early drafts of the housing trailer bill, there were strings attached with SB1 funds, but that fell out multiple versions ago.
Okay.
Board Member Pease.
Thank you. I just want to offer another facet of this conversation, which is that I think it's in our collective best interest to have the mega region be really successful in terms of being able to accommodate the housing, because the more of that burden that they're able to successfully incorporate then in years forward, then we're in a better position to not have to be taking more than our fair share just because we have it together. You know what I mean? So so I'm looking forward to that participation, the advocacy that you mentioned, to be able to get the work done that we needed.
Board Member Hill.
Despite all these scary hypotheticals, I'd be happy to serve from the county's perspective and whoever the city,
a little ahead of ourselves,
whoever the city folks are, I would gladly work with them to represent our.
Well, I could make the same kind of statement from the city point of view, but everybody has had their say. Pete, did you want to say something?
I just wanted to comment on what Supervisor Compton had mentioned about whether or not we're competing for our share of this $125 million. And yeah, I just want to assure you that we have a very good working relationship through the Central Coast Coalition, the 101 Coalition, with the partner agencies in this working group. And we're supporting AMBAG's offer to be the fiscal agent. And just in terms of transparency, they've offered to do this for 2% of the funds. available to the region, and I don't know if that's been clear in the staff report. And we need to follow up on Supervisor Gibson's questions on whether or not these funds can be used to actually build housing versus just planning, and we'll find that out. But I wanted to give some comfort by reading the second bullet on page C2-3, that the intent is to sub-allocate the funds directly and equitably to local jurisdictions, and that's been the stated purpose of AMBAG, to say our intent is to recommend a purely population-based sub-allocation through the working group, and it would be a limited-purpose working group to share ideas about best strategies and where they are in the process. So I think we, and reiterate what James said, we are in the best position to use this working group and rise to the top to be able to compete for the $500 million that's going to be available statewide.
Okay, thank you. And as usual, I'll take the last comments and questions. Oh, we have more? All right, I'm sorry. Your second round.
Thank you. So, Director, it seems like possibly where it says, looking at those bullets, this third from the bottom, perform infrastructure planning, including water systems, transit roads, other public facilities necessary. Like, I'm wondering, you know, could possibly some of that, could that be massaged to help offset some of the costs that a developer might have for affordable housing that they might normally have to take on themselves in terms of sewer connections or things like that, that this money could be used for?
I think that's a reasonable assumption, yeah.
Okay. Yes, Member
Wagner. Just on the issue of who we're going to appoint today, the staff mentioned previously that City Selection Committee is going to make the appointment of the city folks, so city reps, so we would not make that decision here today.
You don't need to make that decision here today. You can make a recommendation to the City Selection Committee if you so desire.
Thank you. All right. I will take my turn. We already have this kind of a situation with Ulsan. We are participating with all of the coastal counties from here south to the border, to the Mexican border. And we are the smallest area in passengers. We have only two stations in our county, and yet we're getting a significant portion of the total money, and we're getting services every day. So just because you're the small member in the group doesn't mean you're ignored or just overwhelmed. It's not that, I don't think that's a valid assumption, because we haven't been overwhelmed in the past. In fact, in the history of the organization, it was us that were the first chairman of the board of that organization outside of the three big counties in its history. So the other counties don't totally ignore us at all. It depends upon how you participate. The one thing that is always true is those who are not at the table are on the table. And this is money that's going to be allocated. It's already funded. So the question is, who's going to get that funding? Not whether the funding is going to be spent. So at this point, what we're doing is we're in it because the state has put us in it. It's not our choice whether or not we're going to be in the group. We are in the region, period, and it's been allocated. It's been decided by the state of California. Whether we individually as jurisdictions want to apply for some of that money, that's our individual choices. And that will then go to the group for a decision as to who's going to get what portion. But let's keep straight how the function is, what the process is. And I think we're getting the process very confused right now. Some of this isn't totally known, but if you look at all the bullet points, there are a lot of things this money could be used for. It could be used to reduce the cost of doing the development, and that cost includes what kind of dedications have to be made, what kind of hookup fees are charged, all kinds of little fees that we charge in order to build a home, any type of a dwelling. And those can get extremely expensive, frequently up to 20 or 25% of the total cost of a unit. If that could be reduced, you've brought the cost of that unit and the cost of maintaining that unit down significantly. So there's a lot of things this money can be used for, as indicated in our own bullet points. But I think that it won't be fully known until this group is actually functioning. Once it's functioning, then we'll know all the rules. It's true. Right now, it's just a matter of, hey, you've already been put in the group. Are you going to participate or not? That's our choice. Yes.
Well, I have really never been a fan of going that big, especially with the unique uniqueness of our own county and our COG. And the 8th region would account for cities, counties, and COGs not included within one of the 7 defined mega regions. So should we choose to not belong to the one mega region of the 5 counties, we are still have the opportunity of belonging to the 8th.
With the legislation change, yes. But that takes legislation to change.
So they're telling us...
You are part of this Central Coast.
You're in this or you're not.
And actually, we dealt with the same issue at CalCOG. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that was pointed out that is when the legislature put this together, there are 2 counties in this state that are totally excluded from the money. They were not put in a region, and they are not given their own money, period. They're only eligible for the first half of the money. They have no eligibility at all for the second half because they're a non-participant.
But why aren't... Yeah,
because that's the state decision. It's not our decision. That's the state legislature.
An 8th region. They can't belong to the 8th region that's listed?
That's the state decision.
Well, that's interesting. But I still believe that it's too big for me, the mega region. It's too much. So I'm just sharing that with my colleagues.
Okay. We'll open to the public. I have no speaker slips. Anybody want to say anything? Seeing nobody, bring it back for a motion, discussion, decision.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'll move staff's recommendation and appoint Supervisor Hill to the supervisor position.
I don't think we're making... Oh, are we making that appointment here? Okay. Is there a second?
I'll second that. I would like to add, if possible, a recommendation that I be considered as a recommendation to the working group who will be appointing the city council representatives.
I don't think that has to be in the motion, but... I've made the same offer myself.
Duly noted.
Okay. Very good. We have a motion and a second. Is this a roll call vote, please?
Voice vote.
Voice.
Oh, this is voice. Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
I'm opposed.
Okay. On the record. Motion carries with 1 negative vote. All right. We have still a RTA meeting to have, and also to finish this up, let's finish up our consent agenda quickly, and then we'll recess to the RTA meeting, because we're going to come back for a consent agenda after that.
Yep.
Yes?
Are we going to go?
Actually, Mr. President, Nina Negranti, legal counsel, we will be taking, we will have closed session for SLOCOG. Before
we're going to have that before we go to...
Yes, that's part of the SLOCOG meeting.
Okay, all right. But the first thing we have to do is the consent agenda. Is there anybody who wants to pull any item from the consent agenda? Supervisor Arnold.
I'm sorry, my light is on it.
Oh, okay.
I will just mention that when I vote on this, I will not be voting on the June 5th minutes because I was absent, so I'll make a vote, but I just want to exclude that.
Okay. Anyone on this side? Yes.
I just had a quick question, and the number is escaping me, but it's the one with the request for audits. I just had a quick question.
So, a question on that?
4 or 5.
Can you address that question to a member of the staff who...
I'd be happy to. So Moss Levy is our consultant. Are they precluded from submitting this time? The staff report says we make a change, and I just want to make sure that they're aware that they're going to be precluded from...
They will be precluded. It's our practice. Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay. Question is answered. Member Pichon.
I'll also be recusing myself on, I don't know which one I wasn't at, but I was absent at 1, so that would be June 5th.
Okay, June 5th. All right. Anyone else? Hearing none, do I have a motion? No. Well, wait. For any public, I have no slips. No. Okay. Supervisor Gibson. Move approval.
Second.
Okay, we have a second from...
Second.
Pichon.
3 of us, yeah.
All right. Lots of seconds. Okay. Pichon. All right. And this is a roll call vote.
Board Member Gibson.
Yes.
Vice President Pichon.
Yep.
Board Member Arnold.
Yes.
Board Member Compton.
Yes, except for June 5th.
Board Member Davis.
Yes.
Board Member Hill.
Yes.
Board Member Lee.
Yes.
Board Member Moreno.
Yes.
Board Member Peace.
Yes.
Board Member Paulding.
Yes.
Board Member Waggy.
Yes.
President Strong.
Yes. All right. And then we are going to go into closed session. But first, I'll ask if there is any, for an explanation of why we're going to closed session. And I'll ask for any public comment on that.
Nina Negranti, legal counsel for SLOCOG. We will be going into closed session for a personnel matter, and that is the executive director's annual performance evaluation pursuant to government code 54957B.
Thank you. We have a public comment on the closed session.
Yes, if we're doing that now. I'm Eric Greening, and I would just like to say that Pete Rogers came into this position with absolutely enormous shoes to fill, and I would say he is growing into them very nicely. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. If we can clear the room of those not party to the closed session, and put up the signs, and we will resume as soon as that happens. Right, we will reconvene this meeting, and we'll ask for a report out of executive session.
Nina Negranti, legal counsel for SLOCOG. The board met in closed session, and no reportable action was taken.
Very good. And at this point, then, we are going to have board member comments and reports. Yes.
Oh, I was just looking at Mr.
Waggy. Oh, yes, Mr. Waggy.
I just want to thank the Board of Supervisors for these great chairs. They're the same chairs we have in our Pismo Beach Council chambers. And I will be able to sit and be much more comfortable when I go to these meetings. So thank you very much.
That's an excellent comment. I second that. Anyone else with any comments on your jurisdictions or anything else of interest to the public or the board members? Seeing none. We will adjourn this meeting, and we will adjourn to the RTA meeting, which will convene in approximately 2 minutes. Oh, do you need more time?
No.
No? Okay.
Where's this movie?
Let's just go.
The mics, there they are. Call this meeting of the Regional Transportation Agency to order, and we will forego the flag salute. We already had that when we started the other meeting here, and we will go to the roll call, please.
Board Member Arnold,
I'm here.
Board Member Compton,
here.
Board Member Gibson,
here.
Board Member Hill,
here.
Board Member Davis,
here.
Board Member Lee,
here.
Board Member Moreno?
Here.
Board Member Paulding?
Here.
Board Member Pease?
Here.
Board Member Waggy?
Here.
Vice President Pichon?
Here.
President Strong?
Here. Very good. We have a quorum, and we will go to public comment, and we have one slip. Eric Greening, public comment for the Regional Transit Authority.
Thank you. Good morning again.
Mike?
Okay, there we, I think it's on, yeah. Good morning again, and I continue to be a very happy user of the RTA system. Occasionally things do go wrong one way or another, and yesterday I happened to be on a northbound Route 9 whose predecessor bus broke down, and fortunately it was at a place where it was perfectly safe for our bus to pull up and take on the passengers that had been on that bus so that they could continue their ride. But it got me wondering, okay, what is the policy? You know, I couldn't remember that there was a written policy about when or under what circumstances that can be done. And apparently it's simply something that is up to the jurisdiction of the drivers and the road supervisor based on the conditions wherever they are and whether they believe they're safe. That's probably fine because I think we've got some very good people in those positions. But it just got me wondering about various kinds of circumstances under which buses can break down various times and places. This particular spot, interestingly enough, if the agricultural cluster that was approved a decade ago on the Santa Margarita Ranch ever actually gets developed, that it was at the spot where a mitigation in the form of a bus stop will be placed right by Wilhelmina Avenue at El Camino. So we have now tried out that spot. But I don't know that there's a real need for a written policy or a formal policy, but I do find that whatever lack of policy we had worked very well, and I can imagine other circumstances in which there would be some frustration because it would not be particularly safe for people to get out of a bus and onto another bus or for another bus to pull up. So I just, from my experience, I suddenly became aware of an issue that I hadn't thought of before, and I'm just glad that it worked out well, and I'm glad we have good minds and good people running the system so that it was minimally disruptive to everyone. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, I have no other slips, so we'll close public comment and come back. We have no information agenda, no action agenda, no staff, no executive director report. We do have a consent agenda with four items. Does anybody want to pull any of those items or want to ask a question or anything? Is there any public comment on the consent agenda?
I think Andy has a question.
Okay. Andy, Member Pease.
Thank you. I just wanted to make a comment about item C4, appreciation for the engine replacement process. I just think that's a great way to, I think it reflects good stewardship of our funds to be able to extend the life of a bus in that way. And so I'm really grateful for that effort.
Okay, thank you. And Member Arnold?
You said no public comment, or you asked for public comment. I was going to make a motion to approve the consent agenda.
Oh, okay. We can proceed with that, yes. Go ahead. So you want to make the motion?
Yeah.
Is there a second?
Second.
We have a second over here by Member Moreno, and this is a roll call.
Board Member Arnold?
Yes.
Board Member Moreno?
Yes.
Board Member Compton?
Yes.
Board Member Gibson?
Yes.
Board Member Hill?
Yes.
Board Member Davis?
Yes.
Board Member Lee?
Yes.
Board Member Paulding?
Yes.
Board Member Pease?
Yes.
Board Member Waggy?
Yes.
Vice President Pichon?
Yes.
President Strong?
Yes. And the motion passes unanimously. And then we are going to be adjourning into closed session, and we'll ask our legal counsel to please explain why we're going into closed session.
Nina Negranti, County Counsel for... legal counsel for RTA. The board will be meeting in closed session to discuss one item with the possibility of initiation of litigation pursuant to subsection C of Government Code 54956.9, and I estimate probably 20 minutes.
20 minutes? Mm-hmm. Okay, do we have any public comment on the closed session? Seeing none, we will close the doors and go into closed session.
Nina Negranti, legal counsel for RTA. The board met in closed session and no reportable action was taken.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries.